Thanks a lot for the invitation and to give me the opportunity to show you our experiments. Our means that there are many more people involved in this experiment, and also lots of groups already. All these experiments are done in collaboration with several groups, what I come towards later. Most prominently, the groups of Anton Zeiling in Vienna and John Rarity's group. And now also contributions from ESA, where we do not get only money from, but also some valuable expertise. Good, I want to show you the idea of free space quantum cryptography and what's there so far, and especially now where we are going to or what we are working on in the moment, particularly this 140 kilometer communication, and perhaps where we go next. I guess Richard Hughes showed already about the idea of quantum cryptography. I don't have to go there. What I just want to remind you is that it's all about non-orthogonal states. Actually, this it took me a while to understand the idea of the cloister, actually. But going back to the very principles, it becomes more clear. Good. To communicate now the single photons, or the photons what we use to encode our quantum key, there are two options, obviously. The one, glass fibers, was already presented to you in the first talk. I want to talk here now on the free space options. So for the free space cryptography, you link Alice and Bob via telescopes. So just imagine both have a telescope and you have to orient the telescope such that they couple as much as possible light from one position to the next. The big advantage now here is we are operating in the near infrared. Air is transparent best around 790-850 nanometer, where you have the high detection efficiency and the low noise from the silicon avalanche diodes. Moreover, it's also relatively economic systems because the lasers what you need are just very cheap laser diodes what you have in CD players or wherever they are. So one option was proposed by the Los Alamos group that you could communicate to satellites so that you have some system, cryptography system up there which exchanges key with some ground station, and then given the satellite approaches another ground station, he can exchange key there as well, and given you trust the satellite that it's not hijacked or whatever, then you can exchange secure key between the two ground stations. Now, in Munich, we don't have always this lots of blue sky like in Los Alamos, but we think that it's also possible, there's also some big advantages, particularly because of the low price, let's put it that way, of free space links, so that it also has some applications in metropolitan areas. And what I do not mention here is that John Rarity is in the moment working on really low, short-distance systems, short-distance meaning 1 or 2 meter, which might give you some other features for access control. Now, the very first experiment, of course, was already a free space experiment. So in this experiment by Bennett, Bissett, Brassard, and Savey, and Smolin in 92 already, was the quantum channel then this free space link with 30 centimeters. And as Richard already told us, there are always issues with side channels, what you have to take care so that the eavesdropper doesn't have access to some other information which might leak from your apparatuses. So the idea now is to make this distance longer. And the first, of course, as I said, there might be applications even for very short distances now. For the long distances, you need good optics, and it's a lot about this free space experiment is to find a decent optics so that you find a compromise between the costs of your telescopes and the link efficiency. A very simple system is running in Munich. It's a test range over pretty precisely 500 meters between two university buildings, so we can securely exchange information with our theory department. And And the system, but more important, except all this information which goes between us here, is it's already self-aligning, so it works continuously all night, etc. And the synchronization is undetected signal, so you do not need any other optic links there. And with a standard 10 megabit link, you can achieve about 47, but what was done here, sifted qubit, and this 40, and then this results in about 20 kilobits per second secure key, but that's already the average all overnight. So it does not mean that it's just some value after lots of alignment, but it's really stable all overnight. Much more advanced electronics was constructed by the NIST group, and they run on significantly higher key rates. That's also some issue what we want to improve here. Currently, it's not written here, it's running on 10 megahertz, and so the first step to do, of course, is to go here to higher frequencies. The link efficiency, of course, is very high already. If you have two telescopes on 500 meter, that's 7.5 centimeter lenses, you get link efficiencies, just the link itself, of roughly 60%. So that's very, very efficient if you have just this short distance. Longer distances have been done already some time ago, and the first one which really tried to go out of the lab was done by the Malvern group of John Rarity, and it wouldn't be the Malvern group if they wouldn't have chosen as the second point a pub nearby. The pub was up on the hills of Malvern neighborhoods there, and so there they put Alice there. And so, and then to communicate most likely the bill what they consumed all night. So in this test, they used 10 centimeter lenses. And with this 10 centimeter and 2 kilometers, they also get very high efficient links actually. But what they already tried to simulate is by varying just the intensity on the sender. Here's the sender on the sender to simulate more or less the attenuation. Just to check what the system really can stand on attenuation. And there they found that 20 dB attenuation, that's a factor of 100, should be feasible. But this, of course, is not what you really can live off then usually, as we will see later on. Another test was then done by the Los Alamos group over 10 kilometers, where they could even exchange key during daytime, and this, I guess, still one of the very, very few experiments. Actually, I don't know any others in the moment which really can run during day. So even our system, what I showed you before, this downtown system, works only during night. We did not manage yet to run it during daytime. Another experiment, just to increase now the distance, that was this 23 kilometers. Experiments in the, on the border in the Alps between Germany and Austria, where we had this 23 kilometers between this position, sender position at Zugspitze, so that's the highest peak in Germany, toward a skiing resort place, where we had the receiver. And you see already the lenses get bigger, and they have to get bigger, and that's not diffraction limited yet. It's by far not diffraction limited. So if you use this here also a 7 centimeter lens at the output of ELIS, it's not an issue of beam spreading due to Gaussian optics that you need a big telescope, but it's really just turbulence. So the turbulence in the air causes you a broadening of your beam, and this is really an issue, because this more or less determines your link efficiency. That's one of the real measures of is how broad gets your beam after your after you reach the receiver in terms of the, or relative to the opening of your telescope. And so in this experiment, we had a loss of 30 dB, so that means a factor of 1,000. That was the best what we could get, but this simply comes, or mostly comes, from the fact that you have about 2 meters of beam at the receiver of light, more or less. It's not really a beam anymore. It looks like a bonfire, what you see there. And so it's really a lousy mode, which just comes from all the fluctuations. It means even in this really quiet air up on the mountains, you have all kinds of thermal fluctuations which cause you airflow, and at the end, over the 20 kilometers, it's almost the same as if you would look above a hot asphalt on the street. It's about the same. So that causes you this 30 dB, but we saw that also with this factor of 1,000 attenuation, you can perform quantum cryptography. So the question is, can we go further? The main problem actually is that we should not say that we did secure communication with this attenuation anyway already, because there have been already lots of assumptions we would claim that it would be secure, because after all we used attenuated pulses with this typical attenuation of 0.1, or I guess in the Los Alamos experiment this was even a little higher. And as we know that the key rate has to be proportional to this overall link efficiency, not only the link efficiency of the optics, but the total lump efficiency, also including the optics and detection efficiency. And if we really would take this serious, then we would run into big trouble. So from this curve, which has a little higher dark count than in the Zugspitz experiment, but eventually it's pretty much the same. After 20 dB, you are at the edge where you can do reasonable quantum cryptography. And particularly the main difference, if you compare the line for BB84 with attenuated pulses according to this criterion, you see this quadratic dependence here compared to the to this linear dependence of the attenuation for the single photon case. And this was always said that we should develop single photon sources. Now we know better. That now we have also the decoy protocol, and so one of the issues of our current test is to compare the two, to check whether it's reasonable to continue with single photon source development, or whether we should use more work on the decoy state protocols. Now for single photon sources, to my opinion, there are now many. There are also experiments by the Stanford group or from Paris with quantum dots or fluorescing defects in diamond, where you have real single photon sources. But I guess so far in the moment, the most efficient and brightest single photon sources still if you use down conversion, if you use triggered down conversion, and if you have entangled photon pairs from your down conversion, then you even have the advantage that you do not need a random number generator anymore. So one experiment was done in Vienna where we had a link of 7.8 kilometer right across Vienna. It was a nice old building. It's a Kufner Sternwarte, so it's an observatory which was built some 150 years ago all the way out of Vienna. Of course, now it's almost in the middle of Vienna. And to a somewhat newer building across the Danube, or close to the Danube. So the problem was that now really this link went right over Vienna and it never got quiet. So even over this short distance, you always had horrible fluctuations, and the link efficiency in this experiment, it was really lousy. So real big distances, one really has to choose the location very carefully. Other experiments, now more recent, is the 1.5 kilometer link over Singapore, so that's also most likely not a very quiet area, but the group of Christian Kurzifer, they made all kinds of stabilizations now, and they could run it really all night, which is already quite a big advantage. And then there was a two-link experiment in China. So, but the question is, can we use these ideas or these tricks which have been developed in these experiments also for the real long distance? The motivation for the real long distance, for this distance of 140 kilometers now, is not the only the distance anymore, but really to evaluate whether such systems really can be designed for satellite connections. And ESA, the European Space Agency, is also interested in such applications of satellite communication, or to secure the satellite communication with QKD. And therefore, they already initiated several projects, but so far that has been only paperwork. But after we did a lot of paperwork, we have been now allowed to do also some experimental evaluation. And for this experiment, now that collaboration between us in Munich and then the Vienna group and again John Rarity's group and from the quantum optics side, and then University of Padua is an astronomy department, and Carlo Cavazzi, Contraves and TESAT are three companies which earn money with space components. So they have already lots of experience with all different parts of space qualified components. TESAT, for example, makes lasers for optical communication. Contraves makes lots of telescopes for optical communication in space. And Carlo Cavazzi has experience with all kinds of satellites itself. So that was the reason to form this collaboration for this next step of ESA projects. Now, the satellites would be typically on low Earth orbits. Low Earth orbits means that they are somewhat higher than the ISS space station, but still somewhere around 500 kilometers. These low Earth orbits, or these 500 kilometers, they cannot really be tested here on Earth. But a big step towards this is this test on 140 kilometers, and this is now between the islands of La Palma and Tenerife. So particularly in Europe, Tenerife has just a synonym for vacation, for sun and beach, and it's a completely different style now if you go there doing these experiments. Okay, so why to choose those places? These two islands are volcanic islands, and they have the particular feature that the humid air coming from the sea condenses at an inversion layer at around 1800 meters. So above this 1800-2000 meter, you have a very dry air. So it's very similar to Hawaii or some such places. And that's also the reason why on both of these islands there are observatories up there, huge observatories. For example, there are these two telescopes only, but on La Palma itself there are more than 20 telescopes of all different types to use really this very dry and humid air up there. So this is the place where we have put our experiments. Yeah, we did not use this telescope, that's the Nordic Optical Telescope here, but just the location there, because this is one of the few places from this La Palma observatories where you have a direct view to Tenerife. They are all hidden behind this cliff there. And on the other end, that's the so-called OGS, the Optical Ground Station in Tenerife. So on the center side, we use this telescope with 15-centimeter lenses. And here at the back, you see the island of Tenerife. And that's this Mount Teide, the highest peak there. And the observatories are somewhat to the right in this region here. For the second lens, I'll talk later. So we have two sources. One is our little module for attenuated pulses, where we have four laser tiles oriented next to each other, always rotated with 45 degrees with respect to the other, and then two conical mirrors to reflect some light from these laser pulses into a single mode fiber. We need only some light because we have to attenuate the laser pulses anyway, and that's then good enough. And in the single mode fiber, we erase any spatial information, of course. The other source is a down conversion source, which is pumped by a neodymium laser, a frequency tripled neodymium laser operating at 355 nanometer. This machine outputs about 3 watts average power on these picosecond pulses with a frequency repetition rate of 250 megahertz. We even had to reduce our pump power then to come to a value of something like 145,000 coincidences. This value was used then during these measurements. Good, and the optical ground station in Tenerife, that's a very particular telescope because actually I guess it's one of the very few, I mean, I don't know any others, but I do not think there are very many of them, where you can orient the telescope horizontally. I guess no astronomer would really want to do this, but this telescope was built already really for testing components for optics communication by the ESA. So that this telescope belongs to ESA and they built it already, and therefore with this option to orient it horizontally so that you really can look across the sea to La Palma. And then inside here, inside the building, there is some nice room with granite optical bench where the beam is then fed to, and there is where we put the receiver optics there. We had to use the old-fashioned EGMG or Perkin-Elmer diodes only. We couldn't use the modules because the slick diodes are too small. Just because of all the fluctuations what we still have, we could not focus the beam further down than about 100 micrometers. So therefore we needed the bigger size of the diodes, which are about 500 micrometer thick. So very important, of course, is tracking. Because if you now just try to link the two telescopes, then on a time scale of a few minutes, the beam is just off the telescopes again. And so the first thing was to try to do tracking here from Tenerife. There is a green tracking laser sent to La Palma, and with the second lens and the CCD camera, we try to track the beam, and this worked quite nicely. And with this, we did the first experiments last autumn with the entangled pair source. But there already we saw that it's of course not very stable as well, because also the big OGS telescope wanders around, and also the fluctuations across the sea, etc., made that the telescope changed the point where it really looked to, and therefore the two telescopes did not couple optimally anymore. And so for the last test now, also this 1 meter telescope is tracked to a tracking laser coming from La Palma. So this now helped a lot, and now we have the setup so that you can run the system almost, I don't say all night, but let's put it that way, for a time quite sufficiently to take any data you want. Good, so the first experiment was the entanglement-based cryptography. With this, with some autocorrelation software, you could find the coincidences from two independent clocks, so there is no other synchronization, just the clicks at the sender and receiver, and some GPS disciplined quartz. Let's put it that way, they are called like this. So with this you could make a time definition of about 2 nanoseconds, and that was sufficient to get rid of all the noise. And so we ended up with some quantum bit error rate of 4.8%. Locally, it was a very nice source. This laser has a very good beam quality, but then with all the optics in the telescope and then also in the OGS, it was a little degraded. And then also, of course, with these values, you can easily violate some Bell inequalities. So this would be an option, and you see that we had a bit grade then of secure bitrate after privacy amplification, etc., of 178 bits in a little more than a minute. Now, decoy state has the big advantage that you get now some value which signals you the information an eavesdropper could have just by using not orthogonal coherent states. So because these coherent states with 0.3 photons or 0.5 photons on average are not orthogonal, the eavesdropper doesn't have a chance to tap on them undiscovered. And so now we can run with this decoy state also very high attenuation. And now we have been quite lucky that actually these are now the data points what we could achieve with attenuation of about 30 dB. And this now shows that with the decoy state, one really can make secure communication also over this 140 kilometers. I could also show you that it's also possible with the attenuated pulses, and it's slightly more efficient. It's about a factor of 10 almost what you could get. So therefore, in the next try, we will try another source for entangled photon pairs, which runs on blue laser diodes, and perhaps which looks more like something what you can shoot up on the satellite. And then, of course, with better timing and eventually adaptive optics, I guess one could get another two orders of magnitude. So it looks quite good also over horribly long distances. Thanks a lot.